Okay. So if that's the case, I'd like to begin the Upper District Board of Directors meeting this morning on September 23rd. And at this time, I'd like to go to the agenda on item number one, which is Pledge of Allegiance. Rubik, can you set us up so we could partake in that?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, let's continue on the agenda. Let's go to item number two. If you hear a name, please signify that you're present. So we'll go with Dr. Fellow.
Present.
Director Trevino.
Present.
Director Santana. So for the record, it's my understanding that she will not be present at this meeting. So we'll excuse her absence. And then we'll continue with Vice President Contreras.
Present.
And then myself, President Chavez, I am present. So let the record show that four directors are present and we do constitute a quorum this morning. Let's go to item number three, adoption of the agenda.
So moved by Contreras.
Second, Trevino.
Okay, it's been moved by Contreras, seconded by Trevino to adopt the agenda as presented. Any questions, discussion? If not, then let's take a roll call. Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Contreras?
Aye.
And then Director Chavez, aye. That passes on a 4-0 vote. Let's go to item number four. We have some special guests for public comments. We'll entertain our two guests first, and then we'll open up the floor if anybody else wishes to address the board of directors from the public. So I would like to introduce first Adan Ortega, a member of the Metropolitan Water District. He's here this morning to address the board, as well as the second one after him would be Gloria Gray. So, Mr. Ortega, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good morning, President Chavez and members of the Upper District Board, colleague Director Charles Trevino from MWD, General Manager Love, and all of my friends on the district staff. I'd also like to extend my greetings to Chairwoman Gray. For a representative from Fullerton, it's a rare opportunity to run for the office of board chair at MWD. In fact, of my eight predecessors over the last 80 years, it's the first time one of us has had this opportunity. So it's humbling to say the least, and I'm grateful to Santa Monica's Judy Abdo, who nominated me, and delegates from the City of Los Angeles and other member agencies who previously supported Chair Gray, who encouraged me to accept the nomination. So I would like to tell you why I'm running for chair of MWD's board of directors. This transitional period with our general manager leaving, as well as our 25-year integrated resources planning process, has not been easy given the pandemic and its economic impacts. We experienced this hardship as we considered our budget, imported water rates, and determining balance between local projects and the Bay Delta dilemma. The challenge of remote meetings has tested our collegiality and our leaders in ways no one expected. For the most part, we have managed to forge consensus, although it has been difficult at times. The reason I believe we need to consider change in the chair is because we have consistently watched consensus come from our rank and file directors. I have been a member of the rank and file directors who have included Director Trevino, Director Camacho of IEUA, Directors Fessel of Anaheim, Solorio of Santa Ana, Quinn of Los Angeles, Goldberg of San Diego, Ballin of San Fernando, and Cordero of Long Beach, and several others who have presented ideas that have been key to the passage of our budget, response to COVID-19 impacts and fiscal restraint, demands for greater data and transparency with our member agencies in the IRP planning process, and most recently, to the idea that the board should be exercising oversight on issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion by creating a subcommittee under our OP&T committee. We are grateful to the committee chairs and members of the executive committee, like David DeJesus, who have heard and encouraged us, even as we faced opposition or silence from our board chair. With my candidacy, the board has a choice. Shall we continue in the more or less advisory role preferred by our current chair, who defers to staff on the exercise of oversight, but mostly asks for input from members of the board? There's a big difference in that approach and what I would facilitate with help from my colleagues. To be in the rank and file and succeed at passing motions and cooperation as we have consistently done over the last 2 years demonstrates a wish to consult amongst our board colleagues, understand the implications of policy, respect differences, and forge consensus. Some people call it leading from behind, but I would like to suggest that it's the type of leadership we need in the front. If I'm successful, the board's vice chairs would be empowered to work with committee chairs to organize the business of the board. This would not be referred to staff. We would also engage the member agencies in meaningful ways. Just yesterday, one of our MWD board colleagues who supports the chair said that MWD is its member agencies. We will hear our member agencies and decide what to incorporate from what they tell us. While I respect my colleague's opinion, this is not consensus. If you follow the 25-year history of the IRP, MWD invested in building consensus with member agencies about the assumptions that we use to determine potential supply gaps and create programs such as the Local Resources Program that has funded much of our progress in recycled water. In other words, we did not take input and then decide what was good for everyone else. This model is at the root of many of our current disagreements. With my candidacy, the board has a choice for how to move into the future. We could remain in an advisory role, providing input and letting staff decide what's in the interest of all of our member agencies, or under the model offered by myself and my supporters, the MWD board can exercise oversight and discretion, actively engage member agencies, and operate by constantly trying to achieve consensus. So thank you very much, and I look forward to Chairwoman Gray's comments as well as your questions.
Thank you, Director Ortega. We really appreciate it. And I should have noted that while we have a standard 3-minute time limit, I'm allowing our two guests they need on this item. And just as a reminder to the board of directors, there's no action item before us on this topic, although we do have Charles Trevino, who is our representative to the Metropolitan Board, that will be casting a vote on one of these candidates. Having said that, I'd like to introduce our other special guest, our chairwoman, Gloria Gray from the Metropolitan Water District. Welcome and thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Yes, thank you so much, President Chavez and other directors of the board. I want to say thank you to Don Ortega for your comments this morning. I think some of them may have been mischaracterized in terms of your comments, but I do thank you for your comments this morning. It is a privilege to come before you today about the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California and the important work ahead for our agency. I was honored to be unanimously elected chairwoman of Metropolitan Board 2 years ago, and have announced my intent to pursue a second term. I am here today to share with you some of our accomplishments, the work we have in front of us, and to ask for your support of my candidacy for re-election. Here are some of our accomplishments. Together in the past 2 years, we've played a pivotal role in the development and implementation of the first ever Colorado River Drought Contingency Plan. Construction was also completed, and we began operating the Regional Recycled Water Project Advanced Purification Center in partnership with the Los Angeles County Sanitation District. This past year, we maximized water storage for Southern California with nearly 4 million acre feet of cold storage, the highest level in metropolitan history. We advance important work on our climate action plan and energy sustainability projects. We also open our doors to a more diverse audience, the people whose communities we serve, but who do not always have a voice. We pledge to be more inclusive, to listen, and to serve in new and better ways. And now, as we build on that endeavor, in tandem with a national discussion about equity and fairness, we launch new initiatives to foster a culture of equity and inclusion at Metropolitan, establishing our first Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council. I think we've made steady progress. We've also initiated important preparations for the future. At our board retreat last fall, we began an important discussion about Metropolitan's role in Southern California, not just as a regional water provider, but also as a vital backstop for each of our agencies who might suffer a loss of supply due to drought or contamination or otherwise. This is important to agencies like Upper San Gabriel Municipal Water District and my home agency, West Basin Municipal Water District, which share much in common. Both of our agencies know the challenges of impaired water quality and the need for both protection measures and treatment solutions to ensure we are able to provide clean, safe water to our communities. At West Basin, which I am the president, current president, we have been actively working to push back saltwater intrusion that threatens our groundwater supplies by creating a seawater barrier with recycled water. And I know that you have been working to protect your basins from a local Superfund site. Groundwater replenishment is also vital to our reliability. And this is where Metropolitan can be helpful, given the significant supplies we currently have in storage. We need to find more ways to get some of these supplies into the ground for the future. Right now, we're in the process of updating Metropolitan's Integrated Water Resources Plan. I believe this is the reliability roadmap for our region that helps us identify the portfolio of water supplies we need for the next 25 years. We have big decisions ahead of us regarding modernizing the state water project with the construction of Delta Tunnels, building the regional recycled water project, which could potentially be the largest recycled water project in the nation and serve as a drought-proof local resource for both groundwater replenishment and ultimately for direct potable reuse, and ongoing investment in local resource projects and conservation to prepare for longer, deeper droughts in a future of climate change. For me, Metropolitan exists to serve its member agency. That means we need an infrastructure system that's reliable. We need operational guidelines that make the best use of the resources we have and that adapt to a changing environment. We need policies that recognize the differences among our member agencies and are fair and equitable. We need to invest in smart water projects for our future. And while I support an all of the above approach to water management, I know we must prioritize because I am concerned about affordability. We need to be mindful that decisions we make can impact the affordability of water for the communities we serve. I'm asking for your support because these are not easy decisions, but I have never shied away from hard work, and I don't intend to do that now. Whether we're talking about personnel changes or policy decisions, fiscal matters or our own working relationship as directors, there is much we can accomplish if we work together. I have appreciated the chance to work with several of you at Metropolitan and through organizations like Aqua. I look forward to getting to know others of you better. I welcome your thoughts and suggestions. I believe we all benefit from listening to the ideas of others, and I pledge to you that I will give your ideas as a form and provide my honest feedback to because I believe this is the only way we can make progress. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today. I humbly ask for your support and sincerely appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairwoman. At this time, I'd like to open it up to any directors that wish to make any comments or any other discussion on this topic. Is there any directors wishing to make a discussion?
I would, Ms. President Chavez.
Yes, Dr. Pellow.
Thank you. Thank you both for being here today, and I appreciate your comments and your vision, and particularly when we talk about the profile, the water profile of MWD, which affects us. I do apologize for the noise. We're having work done, and they wouldn't work because we didn't know if our house would be here because we're in the fire region, and so they wouldn't work the last 2 weeks, but they're here today. So sorry about that. But I think it's very important that we don't have to suffer another drought, our cities. And we're doing a good job. I hope this regional water recycling project goes full speed. I think what you said, Gloria, about conservation, we've found it pays off. But I just want to, do you ever see us dabbling more into desalinization? I know we were looking at a project with West Basin at one time, but what's your take on desalinization for the future, both of you?
Well, thank you, Director Pellow, for the question. I think we need to look at all water supplies, and certainly you're aware that West Basin is considering that. We have completed our ERR and we're in discussion about whether or not the board will support it. But I think that we should look at all water supply, and that's what West Basin is doing right now.
Well, Director Fellow, thank you for your question. One of the first projects I had when I left Metropolitan in 2005 was working with a company called Befesa, which is the major desalination concern in the Mediterranean. They're based in Spain. And they were interested in participating in our desalination projects here in Southern California, primarily the Carlsbad project. What happened is that they operate on a scale that's much smaller than what we envision here in California. And it turned out that the way that they operated the plants that were created by that company is that the users of the water were the ones that were sustaining the plant. In Orange County, where I live, we're having this debate right now about several desalination projects. There's three proposed. I think that it's going to come down to scale, and the scale has to be proportional to affordability. And so I think that's what the debate is going to rest on. And our responsibility at Metropolitan is going to be to tie the debate, as the chairwoman said, to the priorities. And I think those priorities are going to be based on affordability.
Thank you both.
Tony, one thing I do want to add to that. One thing that this space is very sensitive to is the environmental community. And so we are also making sure that whatever decision we make regarding desalination, that it does include an environmentally friendly context. So I think that's very important because the environmental community is really concerned about desalination. So we try to embrace that concern and try to work with everyone as we look at ocean desal.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from other directors at this time?
I do, Mr. President Chavez.
Yes, Mr. Vice President Contreras, please go.
I'm kind of proud for the first time, at least that I know of in the last 20 years, that I've been somehow connected to the Upper District. This is the first time for us to have the candidates coming before us. So I feel privileged that the candidates are coming to us asking for support and endorsement. Because to my knowledge, at least in the last 20 years, this has never happened. So I'm kind of glad that Mr. Ortega, Ms. Gray came before us. And I think this is a thing of the future. The only thing that I also would have wished is with this COVID that we could have had you in person. So with that, and from my point of view, I'm pretty sure from the staff and our other directors, we're grateful that you came before us and expressed your ideas in the future and what you have accomplished. we, at least I appreciate what you have done just before us as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Director Contreras.
Thank you, Director.
Chairman Chavez, if I may, this yes. is Trevino.
Yes, Director Trevino, please go.
Thank you. First of all, let me acknowledge the fact that this is the first time Metropolitan has two people of color running for the board. It's never happened in the history of the Metropolitan Water Board. I also want to acknowledge the fact that Director Ortega reached out to us first. I mean, he asked me, and I told him to ask Tom that he wanted to come and talk to us. And he also suggested that the chairwoman be here also. So I want to acknowledge that. For a long time, as Director Contreras has said, we didn't have quite this type of forum. When people ran for the board chair, we didn't have this. So now I think that Upper District now is seen as an agency that's in the forefront of many, many programs and initiatives, and is well respected now, certainly well respected at Metropolitan. So I just think that this is a tremendous thing, whichever way it goes, whichever way this board wants to go. The fact that we have two people of color running for the board chair, as Director Ballin stated yesterday from San Fernando, this is a momentous occasion for Metropolitan Water District. So we're in very, very good shape. Both people are very qualified. And so I'm really honored by having both of them here to address us. And I wanted to acknowledge both of them for that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Chair, could I make a comment relative to?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Director Trevino, for saying that. And I certainly, we've worked together almost 2 years. I've been on the board for 12 years. I remember when I first got on the board, Director Fellows was there, and I think Director Chavez was there for a little while. And so I've interacted with some of your board members, and certainly Director Trevino, I've worked with him closely because I appointed him as vice chair of the committee, came to me and asked for some leadership role. And so I appointed him to vice chair of one of our committees, and he was elected to serve as a part of the executive committee. So he has definitely been involved in leadership with Metropolitan, and very well. So I welcome his involvement. So Upper St. Gabriel Valley has had a role in decision-making on the board at that particular level. It's interesting that, you know, I think it's wonderful that people of color, all of us, have an opportunity to be in leadership position, because that's very important to me. But in the past, chairs have normally gone for been reelected to the second term for years, because being chair is an awesome honor, but it's very challenging and it's a lot of work. And one of my core values is hard work and commitment to whatever you're committed to. And so usually a chair gets 4 years. It's not something that is unusual. That's been the pattern. And so, but again, it's great that people have an opportunity seek leadership role, but I've tried to be inclusive with board members to put them in leadership roles and try to be fair and equitable in terms of our member agencies, because I think that's very important that we have a diverse leadership, and that has been very important to me. And if any of you heard my speech when I got sworn in, I talked about inclusion and diversity and making sure that board members received information, got the information from staff that they need to make important decisions, because as board members, we are policymakers. We make final decisions. Staff plays a role in terms of providing that information, but ultimately, it's the role of the board to make that decision. So it has been important for me to make sure that questions aren't answered by staff, that staff provides information. It's always a discussion, a debate about what that information is and how that information is gathered. but I've tried to facilitate that because I see that as a very important role as serving as chair of the board. So, but thank you, Director Trevino, for making that comment this morning. And I look forward to working with all of you.
President Chavez, may I make a statement?
Absolutely.
Thank you, President Chavez. I appreciate the chairwoman's comments. And I initiated the idea of having us both because I may only have 3 weeks to have a forum. And the chairwoman is a formidable candidate. But I think the only reason I'm here is because of the diversity on our board. I wouldn't be here if the delegates from the city of Los Angeles, which include people of color and at least one woman, had not asked me to stand as a candidate. And we're in this unusual period where the group that brought the chairwoman to her position has had other perceptions of her performance. So I'm not going to be overly critical of her, but I do want to say that there have been some fundamental dynamics on our board that have led to my candidacy at this point. The issue of diversity and inclusion, I think, has to extend to the board. The chair has created a diversity council that's comprised of employee groups and senior staff. Last week we learned that she had been invited to participate. I'm hoping that she will support the creation of a diversity, equity, and inclusion subcommittee in the OP&T committee that both Director Trevino and I sit on. And I was a little disappointed yesterday because it came up last month, and on the agenda coming forward for OP&T next month, while we're going to discuss the council's report, there was no item in follow-up to the committee's request that we actually create a subcommittee. And so I will appeal to her here, because I may only have 3 weeks to make a difference, that I hope that she will support the creation of that subcommittee, because I think it's important that Director Trevino, for example, who has been a big champion of diversity, as well as Director Murray and others on our board, have a role in determining what's going on. And just to tell you the backdrop, our ethics officer conducted a survey of our rank and file. Only 45% of our employees said that they did not fear retribution for denouncing wrongdoing. Imagine what that means. That means that 65% are in fear of retribution if they are whistleblowers. That there's something wrong with that. And in fact, our rating is lower than the federal government under the current administration. So it is clear that the board has to be involved in policies to protect and reassure our workforce. And I'm hopeful that the chairwoman and my colleagues will support that. So thank you very much, President Chavez. I really appreciate this opportunity and thank you for providing this forum. I think it's the first time ever in the history of Metropolitan that this has occurred. So thank you.
President Chavez, I do have to respond because, you know, I think miscommunication is not a good thing because Director Ortega mentioned that I created a diversity and inclusion council. It was created by the general manager. It was not created by the chair. But I do want to first, you know, I do want to say this. When the whole issue of social injustice came to light for the entire community, our world, right? Certainly California and the states. I made comments at the board meeting about the need to look within our system in terms of diversity, inclusion, and equity. And at that time, there was no one, not one board member said they support that, they disagree with that. There was no statement made by the board, but I thought it was important to highlight that subject matter. And as a result of that, I had a discussion with the general manager, and the general manager initiated an effort to address that within our Metropolitan Water District. So created this Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity Council, which was a great thing because it included the employee resource group, the bargaining units, and senior management. And I was invited to attend. And so it's not my council. It's not a board chair committee. And some of the issues that were brought to OPNT have been ongoing issues for years at Metropolitan, retaliation concerns for years. They're not new. They're not new. But I think we're taking an approach to deal with them where we're building trust with the employees to for them to believe that we're really trying to address them. OPNT committee, I think, is the area where those issues were brought to that committee for many years. And yes, John Murray has been the chair for many years. And Director Otago is on that committee now, but the concerns have been brought to that committee for years. So this is nothing new. And so to now want to do something is great. Be active. You've got to try to resolve some of the issues. So I think that's a great idea to do that, to look at that. So I am not opposed to trying to find solutions. That if OPNT wants to have a subcommittee, that's great, because I'm here to find solutions to issues. Certainly there have been some concerns by men employees regarding retaliation and equity and inclusion and diversity. And I totally support any effort to find solutions to that.
Okay, and on that note, I'd like to conclude the discussion by thanking both of you for attending. We're very proud of both of you. We have worked with you not only as a district, but I know myself, who has served on the Metropolitan Water District, as well as a doctor fellow who served a long time as well. So we know the information, we know the background, and we thank you for bringing that before us. So we are proud of both of you that not only are you both fighters, as we can see, but also you're going to fight for our district, you're going to fight for our residents. So no matter who wins, we know we have some qualified people, and like I said, we're so proud of both of you. We look forward to continue to work with both of you even after the selection of a chairperson. So with that, again, thank you for joining us. We're going to continue on our meeting, and we'll see you very soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chairwoman.
Ms., we should open it up for other public comment from our attendees.
Absolutely. So is Christy, do we have any other people who have their hands raised in public comment?
And President Chavez, yes, I don't.
Yeah, if you're calling in by phone, you can dial *9 to raise your hand.
So do we have anybody wishing?
I don't see any hands raised, President Chavez.
Okay. I'm just asking because I had like 39 participants, and just in case they had any questions or comments. If not, if there's no other public comments, then we'll move forward on our agenda.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Then we'll move forward to item number 9, which is our consent calendar. Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar as presented?
So moved by Director Contreras.
Second by Farrell.
Okay. So the consent calendar is moved by Director Contreras, seconded by Director Fellow. Any discussion? If not, let's take a roll call vote. Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Contreras?
Aye.
Director Chavez? Aye. The motion passes on a 4-0 vote. Then we'll go to item number 6, which is actions and discussion items. There's two items on the board, and they're for informational purposes only. We'll go to item number 6A first, which is the Metropolitan Water District rate structure. So, Tom, can we get some information on that?
Absolutely. So we have two of the staff members from Metropolitan from the finance division, the CFO, Catano Cassini, and Arnout Vandenberg. And I'll turn it over to Catano to do an introduction. Welcome.
All
I think Katana was trying to connect. I believe she just called me. Okay, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we can. Yes. We can hear you. Or not.
Yeah, that's good. I don't know if we.
Yes,
it looks like she's having some connection issues. Audio.
Katana, are you there? It looks like she is having a little difficulty connecting.
Yeah, well, we can get started if that's okay.
Yes.
Okay, so I am the Revenue and Budget Manager for Metropolitan, and we put together a few slides here to go over Metropolitan's rates and charges with some particular emphasis on the fixed charges. So next slide, please. So these are at least some of our charges. We'll go through all of them one at a time just to do a really quick review here. So we have our Tier 1 supplies, which recovers Metropolitan supply costs. We have our Tier 2 supply rate, which reflects Metropolitan's cost of purchasing water transfers north of the Delta. There's no member agency that's currently paying the Tier 2 rate. It's because of the way the purchase orders were set up. We have the system access rate, which recovers the cost associated with the delivery of water to meet member agencies' averaged annual demands. And that includes the cost of conveyance, distribution, and a portion of regulatory and emergency storage facilities. We have the system power rate, which recovers the cost to pump water to Southern California through the State Water Project and the Colorado River Aqueduct. Next slide, please. We have the water stewardship rate, which recovers the demand management costs. So this would include conservation and local resource projects. So in 2020, the water stewardship rate is $65 an acre foot. Per board action, there is no water stewardship rate for 2021 or 2022. Demand management will be funded entirely by the reserves left in the water stewardship fund until the board approves another alternative for that. Next, we have the treatment surcharge, and this is providing the cost of treated water. So for those who receive treated water, this is an additional expense. And then we get to our fixed charges. We have the RTS charge, which is a fixed charge that recovers the cost to provide emergency service and available capacity to meet outages and hydrologic variability. We'll have some more detail on this on a following slide. And next, we have the capacity charge, which is set to recover the cost providing peaking capacity within the distribution system. And also we'll have some more information on a following slide. So this is a overall table that shows our rates and charges. So we have the current charges for 2020 and we have our adopted charges for 2021 and 2022. So overall at the way bottom there, you'll see that the rate increases for 2021 were adopted at 3% and 4% for 2022. Most of these increases are actually associated with a lower projected water transactions. In our previous budget, we had anticipated that we would trend toward 1.8 million acre feet. We have reset that at 1.6 million acre foot. Despite that, as it may, I don't know if you guys are aware, but we're actually trending closer to 1.4. So we're hoping that we'll get to that 1.6 at some point, but it's actually not looking like it.
Please re-enter your meeting ID followed by pound.
I don't want to go through all these in great detail, but in order in essence of time here, but let's see. So if you go down, you see the Tier 1, Tier 2 rates, the system access rate, the water stewardship rate, as you can see, it's zero in 2021. It's not applicable. We have the system power rate. You might notice that the system power rate went up quite a bit in the first year at 18%. That's due to both increases on the State Water Project side, due to higher cost for the California Independent System Operators transmission access charge, and on the Colorado River Aqueduct side for the greenhouse gas charge, which has been added. So when we add together the Tier 1 supply rate, system access rate, water stewardship, and system power rate, you get to that full service untreated charge there. If you add the treatment surcharge, then you get to the full service treated rate under there. And then we have the RTS charge. You'll see it actually went down for the first year to $130 million. That's due to reduced capital finance cost due to favorable refundings that we've been able to do. And we also reduced PAYGO financing by $10 million. And the next to last line is the capacity charge. You'll see it went up considerably there, at least on a percentage basis. This is due to peaks actually going up while the average flows are projected to go down. So costs have basically shifted from the RTS charge and the system access rate to the capacity charge. Next slide, please. So the capacity charge recovers the cost of our peak distribution system capacity and a portion of regulatory storage. It's allocated to member agencies based on a 3-year trailing summer day non-coincident peak. And it includes the San Diego County Water Authority exchange and wheeling. It does exclude replenishment, cyclic, and conjunctive use programs, again, which are not taken on a peaking basis. That is, the metropolitan typically decides when it is they take that. So it's, the capacity charge is not applicable to that. The total capacity charge revenues for fiscal year 2021 is estimated to be $35 million for all member agencies. The next slide shows, you can move on to the next slide, thank you, shows how it is that the capacity charge was calculated for a calendar year 2021. The first section here is from our cost of service report, which shows the revenue requirement for the capacity charge and the two components, the two primary components that make that up. So you'll see that the distribution system peaking capacity capital costs were roughly $28 million. And then the regulatory storage for peaking was another 9. These, and then below there was the projected non-coincident peak, and then the final charge that was adopted for calendar year 2021. You'll note that if you multiply those two together, you get actually slightly more than the revenue requirement, but you need to keep in mind that the it's a calendar year charge, so the calendar year charge for the prior year was lower. So if you add those two together, you'll see that you'll still kind of under-collect the revenue requirement. Hopefully that makes sense. The next slide, we have the capacity charge for calendar year 2022. And similarly, you'll see that the components went up slightly. We didn't change the projected peak, and the we have a slightly higher capacity charge of $22,200 per CFS. On the next slide, we have some details on the RTS charge. So this recovers the capital costs for emergency storage and available capacity for conveyance, distribution, and regulatory storage. It's allocated to the member agencies based on a 10-year rolling average of firm demands, and it includes sales, exchanges, transfers, cyclic, and conjunctive use programs. It excludes by agreement the San Diego County Water Authority Exchange, and also excludes water under certain programs like agriculture and replenishment. It's collected via the water bill and a standby charge on parcels for the 22 member agencies which have elected to do so. The RTS charge revenues for fiscal year 2020-21 is $133 million for all member agencies. And in the next slide, you see how it is that the charge came about, and in terms of how it is in our cost of service. These are the major components in it. So we have the storage line on the top, about $56 million. We have the capital costs associated with the conveyance capacity at $51 million. The distribution portion is about $17. Again, that leads to our revenue requirement for that fiscal year. And below is the $130 million calendar year charge that was adopted to reflect that. And then on the following slide, we have similar numbers that went up a little bit for calendar year 2022, and the capacity charge, sorry, the RTS charge of $140 million that was adopted for that calendar year. Next, we have some more detailed member agency information. We have here, this was part of our cost of service report, so we actually have the billed at the time, the projected standby charge for 1920. We do since have the actual, but didn't have a time to get it together in time for this report. The standby portion is more or less fixed, right? So it has not gone up for the member agencies, but in terms of projecting for a cost of service, we project fairly conservatively in terms of delinquency rates. The actual delinquency rates came in lower, so we actually collected a little bit more than is on this. So for Upper Sangamon dollars, we actually collected a little bit more than that on standby, a credit of around $26,000. It looks like Upper San Gabriel have received a credit for the last something like 13 years. And I believe part of the reason for this presentation is because that doesn't looks like it's not going to change, because as looks like that's going to change as Upper San Gabriel is picking up a larger share of the RTS going forward. So looking at the current year projection, 2020-21, on the next slide. There we go. It looks like the Upper San Gabriel is going to end up with a net RTS charge because the standby does not collect enough. So it looks like, at least on a projection basis, that there's going to be, you know, somewhere around $260,000 worth of net RTS charges on the bill. So those are the slides that I have put together. I'd be happy to take any questions if anybody has anything.
Ruben or Nicole, you go back to that last slide real quick. Katana, welcome. Are you connected to audio now?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. First, before I go to your questions, I do want to thank you for inviting us. It was really a pleasure to be able to join your team and listening in today. And I just want to say to Director Trevino, you're one of the first people who welcomed me to Met. So I really was happy to join this and happy to come back anytime. So thank you.
We'd love to have you back anytime.
Okay.
So do we have any questions from directors regarding the presentation?
I do, Mr. President.
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Vice President, you have the floor.
Okay, thank you. These are questions obviously for Mr. Vanderberg, and I hope I pronounced your name correctly, not to misrepresent you by any ways. I love your slides, but I have questions, and my board will not be surprised if I didn't ask my questions. That you mentioned recovery cost, you mentioned fixed cost. Is that honest 100% recovery, or is there a 3, 4, 5% for profit for Metropolitan? That's question number one.
For profit, well.
I mean, to pay above and beyond. I know that with who I work, we were obviously a private company that we had stockholders. So we also above and beyond, as you mentioned, recovery costs, fixed costs, we also had to collect for our shareholders. Does this, this numbers that you gave us include a piggy bank account for whatever reason it may be?
I guess the answer is no, is clearly no. So for the adopted rates and charges, the overall rate increase was at 3%, and that assumed a draw from our reserves of around $19 million. And that was if we hit 1.6 sales. So it looks like currently we're not trending to hit 1.6 sales. We're actually trending closer to 1.4. So it's anticipated, at least it looks tentatively so far, that we're going to be making substantial draws from reserves. And as you might be aware, the board has already taken additional actions to cut other expenditures in light of seeing that. So no, there's no over-collection here. We're actually under-collecting.
Okay, I have three questions. My second question is, on wet years, would the rates go down since we get natural rainwater that it may be more rain available to us or more water available? Would there be a discount on that, or the rates are fixed whether we get very little water or excessive amounts of water?
So let's see. So we have two fixed charges, right? And the rest are variable rate charges. So that, you know, I guess the charge to your agency will depend as to the amount of water you purchase. If you're asking if Metropolitan will change its rates due to a differentiating water transaction, is that what you're asking?
Water conditions more than anything else.
And well, so we have quite a lot of...
Metropolitan may have way more water.
Right, we have quite a lot of water in storage. You know, again, currently our budget was based on water transactions, total water transactions of 1.6 million acre foot. At the moment, we're not looking like we're going to hit that. We hope to sell 1.6, at which case we would have a smaller draw in reserves than we're currently seeing. You know, we're having a really hard charge maintaining our coverage targets for revenue requirements and fixed charge coverage, which are very essential to maintaining Metropolitan's high credit rating. So at this point, you know, we're doing our best to maintain Metropolitan's fiscal integrity in order to keep our costs as low as possible. Perhaps
so
Katami
if I might add, I think the two costs that we're talking about fixed, there's a formula for both. So even though we're talking about hydrologic conditions, if it's wet or dry, those two fixed costs have a formula how they're driven. So if you look at the original, a few slides, that background slides, they're very specific on how you get RTS and how you get capacity charge. So that, I don't think that helps.
Director Contreras, could I clarify a little bit? So Metropolitan's rates are not based on the amount of supply they have available. It is 100% based on the amount of sales that they have. So water and storage does not do them any good unless they can sell it. So that's why, and in fact, if we do get a rainy year locally, then demands go down and sales go down. And that has an adverse effect on Metropolitan's budget. And I think—
Okay, my last question I may have, and whether Catano or Mr. Vandenberg, is on one of your charts you show the net standby charges by cities and one other water company. Three of the cities do not pay any standby charges whatsoever, where the other, pretty much the other 18 member agencies do pay. Why do they get a break and the rest of us don't, out of curiosity?
Right. So the standby charge is actually not charged. The actual charge that Metropolitan charges is the RTS charge. And the standby is what Metropolitan collects on behalf of the member agencies to pay for part of its RTS charge. So the member agency gets to decide if it wants Metropolitan to pay or collect the standby charge on its property taxes on its behalf. And that amount is credited toward the RTS portion. So there is actually no standby charge. Again, we're just collecting it on the member agency's behalf.
So that's kind of like for our piggy bank, but those four agencies don't want to have a piggy bank.
Well, they have elected us not to recover it. So that means that they charge the RTS charge in other means within their system, right? So then they charge it to their customers or their retailers in some other fashion.
Thank you, sir. I'm being educated. That's all, Mr. President.
Thank you. Any other questions from directors? If not, then I want to thank our presenters this morning. You did a terrific job, and the information will be very valuable to us. And thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Take care.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay. We'll continue on the agenda, looking at item 6. Which is our Upper District 60th anniversary. And Patty, are you going to take the lead on that?
Well, I'll get it started, but I need to give credit to Patty, Nicole, and the team for pulling this together. I find it fascinating. I do want to check, because we're hitting coming up on an hour. Any directors have any time constraints? This will probably take about 15 minutes.
Okay. That should be fine.
Okay. All right, so do you want to show the presentation, Nicole or Ruben? All right, 60 years of water, and this is the first of a few 60th anniversary presentations we'll be making over the next few weeks in anticipation of a 60th anniversary virtual celebration. Right now, it looks like November 12th, day after Veterans Day, seems like the best day to do that, so kind of pencil that in on your calendars. So next slide. So this is kind of a timeline, in fact, this presentation just takes us up through the early years of the district. You can see starting way back in 1945, the water problems became evident, then working through the 50s, 60s, And towards the end of the decade, about a month and a half after the first moon landing in September 3rd, 1969, is where we kind of end this one, when we constructed USG-3. And then later on, we'll go through some more of our history in a future presentation. Next slide. So as the region grew, you've heard this when Ken Manning gave us a history of the water in the valley. As the region grew, agricultural uses and then urban development came in after World War II. Water demands continue to increase. Next slide. Back in 54, a meeting was held in Azusa at the request of the city of Long Beach, and that was the beginning of the Long Beach judgment, which ended up adjudicating the San Gabriel River. Steve Johnson gave us a presentation on that a few months ago. Next slide. Water demands continue to rise. As part of the solution, it was recognized that in order to solve this problem, a new source of water was necessary. And the formation of a municipal water district was one of the possible solutions to that. Next slide. So in 1959, Long Beach, actually it's Lower Basin versus Upper Basin, the Long Beach judgment, Long Beach Compton, Central Basin Municipal Water District and others entered into a lawsuit. This was a stipulated judgment. The parties had already met, worked out a solution. But the solution included an adjudication administered by the court, and the Long Beach judgment was entered into. Next slide. And then there was a public information campaign. The formation of Upper District required a vote. And so there was a campaign issued that said, hey, let's get going and let's form this district. Next slide. This is an interesting letter from the Upper San Gabriel Valley Water Association. That entity still exists. I look at the signature, the name is Carl Fawcett. Carl was our first general manager. He was also executive director of the Water Association. A little later, I'll tell you, he was also general manager and executive director of the Central Basin Water Association and the Central Basin Municipal Water District and WRD and West Basin concurrently. Pretty busy guy. So we continued the campaign. You notice our first address was down on Las Tunas Drive in Temple City. I think Mr. Origi, you live there near there, if I'm not mistaken. And we created the Municipal Water District. Continue. El Monte backs the Water District Plan. The board is named, you'll see that picture off to the left. Our first board members. Next slide.
Was Tony in that picture? Tony Fellow? No.
Yeah, he was. No, I'm kidding. A petition was circulated, gathering signatures so we could put this on the ballot. Obviously, that was successful. And it was a special election. It was actually an election held in December of 1959. Next slide. And on December 8th, 1959, the voters approved with an 83% approval margin, which is pretty high, the formation of the district. Next slide. And so you see here, and I'll point out in a minute, there is one city missing who is now part of the district. West Covina, if I'm not mistaken, I all of a sudden forgot. Yeah, West Covina wasn't part of our original formation. They joined us later. Next slide. And so officially we were incorporated in January of 1960, 60 years ago this year. Next slide. And on January 11th, we held our first meeting. At that Temple City office with J. Ursel Clemenson, Frank Bouchon, Howard Hawkins, no relation to Christie, William Forrester, and I want to say Robert Redford, but it was Robert Radford, director. Next slide. Just a picture of the oath of office, and this book you see on the right-hand side, the minutes from 1960, is in our library here in the office. Next slide. First general manager, Carl Fawcett. And as I mentioned, Carl was a busy man. He was really a founding father of many municipal water districts in Los Angeles County. Jane Bray was the deputy secretary. She became our first general manager. And I haven't fact checked this, but I do believe she was the first female general manager for any metropolitan member agency.
And a wonderful woman.
Some Tony, you've obviously met Jane. I did not have that.
I knew her very well.
Very well. And then Mr. Stetson, Stetson Engineering has been our district engineer since our formation. I'm sure Steve has some very good stories about Tom Stetson, and he too
is a
very influential leader in water in Los Angeles County. I do want to share a story about Tom Stetson and the work they did, not in our district, but in West Basin. So in West Basin and along the Dominguez Gap and Alamitos Gap, there are seawater barriers that are operated by the County of Los Angeles Public Works that have been in place since the 1950s and 60s. Tom Stetson was one of the engineers who did the studies to place those barrier wells and operate. I was speaking with a colleague just a few months ago who has done some new modeling work on the West Coast Barrier Project. And he said he is amazed at the accuracy and how well the design of those barrier systems were with the technology they used back in the 1960s. So I think that speaks to Tom Stetson's capabilities.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was an attorney.
It does say district attorney. He was our district engineer. He was not
I'm saying he was an engineer. But I have to also interject, that was the nicest man I have ever known in my entire life.
Yeah.
And then our first attorney was Ralph Hemm, and a little history on Ralph. Ralph was also the attorney at West Basin and Central Basin and several others. Ralph hired a young attorney named Wayne Lemieux. And you guys are familiar with because our attorney used to be Lemieux and O'Neill. And so Wayne took over the practice. And in the 1990s, I was working at West Basin at the time, and Wayne was West Basin's attorney. And Wayne hired a young litigator named Stephen O'Neill. So there is a lot of very interesting history here that I find fascinating. Next slide. So we formed the district, but we hadn't joined Metropolitan. So we had to figure out, okay, how are we gonna get imported water? A couple of the options that were reviewed is becoming a state water contractor. And the other was joining Metropolitan. Now, remember at the time, the state water project had not been constructed. The only active source of supply for the region from imported water was the Colorado River Aqueduct, which was constructed by MWD. And so I wish I could take credit for this great work, but they reviewed the options, and most of the cities in the San Gabriel Valley realized the best option was to join Metropolitan Water District. And there are four cities that decided to be a state water contractor, and that created the formation of the San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District. But there were 17 drafts. And I got ahead of myself. So what I'm showing here is Water Master hadn't been formed yet. So in 1961, certainly we solved the problem, or at least the adjudication of the river was done, but the groundwater basin itself had to be managed. And so they went through at least 17 drafts of a statement of principles for a settlement agreement. Next slide. Stetson report, and that's where they looked at sources of water, the Colorado River water, the Feather River, which is the source of the state water project. They even looked at desalinization way back then and recycled water. Next slide. Quote from Tom Stetson, or excuse me, J. Russell Clemenson, Upper District Board. This is our report to you on what has been accomplished and on the job that has yet to be done, carrying out your directive to secure our water future. Next slide. The discussions continued. with these cities listed here, amongst others, was a call to annex to Metropolitan Water District. If they did not, if they waited to do that, it would have cost an additional $26 million in annexation charges over the course of 30 years to join Metropolitan. Next slide. Negotiations continued in 63, and you can see vote yes for water. Another vote was held to join Metropolitan. Next slide. Special election, March 12th, 1963. 81% voter approval. And our first Met directors were J. Ursel Clemenson and Howard Hawkins. Back then, the Mets changed their governance in the late 1990s. But up until that time, we did have two directors, including Director Fellow and Director Frank Forbes, were our representatives when Metropolitan made that governance change.
You believe I served with Howard Hawkins on the MWD board too. He was a longtime member of our board and that board.
And if I may add another comment, it was Bill Robinson, whether you liked him or not, took out Mr. Howard Hawkins on the election. One of the, that's when Bill Robinson first came into our board. Strange as it may seem.
All right, and my slide's blocked a little bit here. I gotta move part of my Zoom screen somehow. There we go. So getting back to the main basin judgment, the adjudication, the upper district versus city of Alhambra, among others, Water Master was formed by the courts in 1967. Next slide. So we've joined Metropolitan, the river's been adjudicated. The basin has been adjudicated. Upper District is now a Met member agency, but we still do not have that imported water supply. And in 69, we executed an agreement signed by Mr. Fawcett to have Metropolitan construct USG 3 using what's called the Glendora Tunnel. Next slide. And this picture, if you stand on Azusa Canyon Road above USG 3, this is what it looks like down at the riverbed prior to the construction of USG 3. Next slide. Little engineering drawing we found showing USG 3 going from left to right. That big pipeline is the end of the Glendora Tunnel. And the pipe coming out of that going to, I'm sorry, on the, did I say the left hand? I said it meant on the right hand side. And then coming to the left and down the slope is USG 3. Next slide. And we don't know who the gentleman is standing on the top of USG 3, but if you were to look at USG 3 today, I don't think you could tell much difference from what it looks like in this picture. Next slide. And there is USG 3 today. And I think those trees haven't grown in 50 years. Next slide. So that I did go through that a little quicker than I planned on, but I know in the interest of time, I rushed through some of that. We will share this with the directors, of course, and it'll be posted on our website. But that's just the first roughly 10 years of our history, and there was a lot that happened in that period of time. So be happy to try and answer any questions.
None other than Tony's been part of half of that time. A good 30 years. Thank you, Tony.
So do we have any other comments or questions, directors? If not, then we'll move forward. Thank you for the presentation. Now, this is one of three presentations that we're going to hear from.
Yes, Patty, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so it's a mini series.
It is. And And we're still working on the final edits to the video. It includes the interviews that Terry did with the board here in the boardroom pre-COVID. And so we're hoping to have that completed very soon as well.
Okay, and eventually it'll all be on our website, correct?
Yeah, there's already some of this information on our website. This presentation I just made to you will fix the route or the district attorney label, but we will post that on our website, and so the public will have access to that as well.
Excellent.
Steve Johnson there. What did they used to call Tom Stetson, the Indians?
When he was investigating? They used to call him Chief No Feathers.
Yeah. He did a lot of negotiations with the Indians.
Yes.
Good man.
Yeah, he was a very good man, yes.
Okay. So let's go ahead and continue. Thank you for the presentation. We'll go to item number 7, which is informational items that are in that you can read at your leisure. We'll go to item number 8, which is our attorney's report, Stephen O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things to report on today. In terms of recent activities, we followed up from the last closed session concerning the GM performance review, performed some work on that, and corresponded with the general manager about moving that forward. Also reviewed and edited the cyclic storage agreement with Metropolitan that was, I believe, presented at committee yesterday. And also did a little bit of correspondence and some a little bit of work on the 60th anniversary working with Tom and Patty. But I thought today would be a good opportunity to take a few minutes and review the status of the litigation with San Diego and Metropolitan. I know I've reported on it intermittently in the past, but given that you had the rate review today, it might be might have a little more relevance to the board's discussion because there have been some significant developments. You may recall that this litigation began in 2010 when San Diego brought a lawsuit challenging Metropolitan's rate structure. And since Metropolitan sets its rates biannually, San Diego chose to sue biannually. So every year that that Metropolitan set rates, San Diego filed a lawsuit. So we have lawsuits filed in 2010, 2012, 2014, 16, 18. And so that's the litigation landscape right now. And as I've reported previously, the parties agreed that they would litigate the 2010 and 2012 cases initially, with the expectation that many of the legal issues that would be decided in those cases would be determinative in the later filed cases, because the issues are very similar. To step back, you'll notice from this morning's presentation that Met's rate structure is really disassembled in a way, and that all the different components of the rates are identified. That didn't begin until 2003. Prior to that, Metropolitan had one rate that they charged, and all the different components of the rate were not revealed. So in an effort for transparency, apparently in 2003, they started to disaggregate the rates. And you may recall from previous discussions that one of the big issues that San Diego had was how Metropolitan allocated costs to its transportation rate, and especially the component, what's called the water stewardship rate, or WSR. You saw that as one of the slides today. San Diego alleged that that component should not be included in Metropolitan's transportation rates or Metropolitan's wheeling rates. And so the best way to think about this litigation is in two areas. The number one is the challenge to the rate structure itself. And number two, it was a breach of contract. And the breach of contract flows from the rate challenge. The contract that's at issue was the exchange agreement that Metropolitan entered into with San Diego as part of the transfer of water from IID to San Diego. That was reached also in, I believe, 2003. So to cut to the chase, as we've reported in the past, this case has been litigated through trial, went up to the Court of Appeal, and then back down to the trial court. You may recall that initially on the rate challenge litigation, the trial court ruled that Metropolitan's inclusion of the water stewardship rate was improper, and also that Metropolitan's inclusion of the of Met's costs for the state water project was improper. That resulted in a verdict of $188 million to San Diego, with $46 million in interest. And that was, of course, appealed. We just recently had the court enter judgment on these cases. And based on the Court of Appeals ruling, that judgment has been reduced up by $160 million because the Court of Appeal found that Metropolitan was entitled to include its state water project costs in the rates, but it was not entitled to include the WSR rates. So the Metropolitan tendered judgment and the requisite interest back in February 2019. They tendered $44 million to San Diego. San Diego rejected it, saying that this was it was premature, that the case hadn't been resolved yet. But the trial court disagreed. So San Diego did prevail on the rate challenge in the end. But they did not. Did not get the big financial victory of the $160 million. They received the $44 million. On the breach of contract. Those damages arose from the breach of contract. As to the rate challenge, the court did find that it was improper for Metropolitan to include the WSR component in those rates. So the judgment was entered in generally in favor of San Diego on both the rate challenge, the breach of contract, and some ancillary issues, namely preferential rights and the rate structure integrity provision that Metropolitan was operating under. Both those were found in favor of San Diego. There is a hearing coming up in November, an important hearing on who is will be determined to be the prevailing party. Prevailing party is a term of art that awards, that allows the prevailing party to receive its attorney's fees, which as reported in the past, attorney's fees in this case are very, very substantial. And that hearing will take place in November. And with all that, we've just covered the 2010 and 2012 cases. Moving forward, the 2014 and 2016 cases are about to be litigated. San Diego has filed amended complaints in those matters. The Metropolitan team, along with the member agencies that are joining Metropolitan in the defense, are poised to follow a responsive pleading to those cases very shortly. So it looks like in the short order, we're wrapping up the early cases that were in large part, I guess you could say a split decision. San Diego did achieve some of its goals, but it did not achieve the big financial goal that it was seeking. Metropolitan prevailed on that. So the court could determine there was no prevailing party on those cases. And the 2014 and 2016 cases are about to commence. So that's where we are with regards to those cases, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you. Do we have any? If not, thank you, Mr. O'Neill, for your report.
Short thing, Mr. President.
Yes.
I just want to report that recently Governor Newsom signed a bill, Assembly Bill 992, which has to do with the Brown Act and how a meeting is defined for purposes of the Brown Act relative to all the new social media platforms that are out there. I'm going to be doing an analysis for Tom that'll be distributed to the board, but the big takeaway is that the legislation says that now if one member of a public agency, a board, posts something on social media, that no other member shall respond to that posting or sharing or whatever is posted on the social media, even with an emoji or a like button, that it's really intended to prevent social media from being used as a runaround for public meetings. We are preparing an analysis with some examples and some do's and don'ts that we're going to send out to Tom Shirley that he can distribute to the board. So we'll likely have more discussions on this in the future. It was recently signed and it's currently being digested by our staff.
So just a quick question then. If that was just signed into law, usually those laws take effect January 1, unless it's an emergency bill or urgency bill. So which one is this one?
I do not think it's an urgency bill. And so, but it could impact a lot of districts. So we want to get in front of it and give everybody some guidance on it. Because, for example, we were talking about how to interpret this bill. And we used an example if, Director Contreras posted something on Facebook saying, hey, the district did a great job on a water line break and that was posted. Does that mean that Director Trevino could not like that or give it a thumbs up emoji? It seems to say that in some ways changes the definition of a meeting, because as you know, a meeting was always a majority, which in your case is three members. Now it seems to suggest that just two members engaging in that type of communication is improper. So we're still trying to sort through this, and I'm just giving you a heads up that because you may be hearing people talk about this.
Okay, go ahead and do your analysis on the bill and let us know as soon as possible.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, let's go ahead and continue on the next item is number 9, our general manager. Mr. Love?
Yeah, just a couple of quick items. And Ruben, Nicole, will you pull up the last slide of the 60th anniversary? Patty pointed out I forgot one slide, but while I'm giving my report. So I did listen in on the Water Master Status Conference before Judge Duffy Lewis on, I believe it was September 26th, Friday. Tony Zampiello, Kelly Gardner, Steve Johnson all presented to the judge. The judge, as always, was very engaged, very interested in this judgment. So Water Master gave the judge a report on the status of the basin, pointed out the improved water supply conditions given the 100,000 acre feet that was delivered into the basin from imported water last year. Also talked about something that the judge is particularly interested in is the outreach and education. So people understand what the basin is and why it's so important to their water supply. And what I see is it says additional slide. Maybe go to the next one. I'm not sure why it's not showing, Robert. There you go. All right. So they gave that report to the judge. And the judge actually asked for another tour of the basin after, assuming COVID ever ends, when we're able to do that. So it went really well. The judge also approved two cyclic storage agreements. One, I think, was Puente Valley Water District, and the other was the Three Valleys Municipal Water District cyclic storage agreement with Metropolitan and Water Master. Upper District, we will bring to the board here in the near future a similar agreement for Upper District, which ultimately will need to be approved by the judge. And lastly, is tonight is workshop edible gardening workshop number 5. We've had 5 now. Every one of them have sold out. We don't charge for them, but they are full. And we're working on our next series of online workshops as well. That concludes my report, Mr. President.
Thank you. Any questions from directors?
I have just a comment. Yes. You mentioned that we met, or you guys met with the judge on September 26th. I don't think September 26th is here yet. And did they change the time of that on this gardening stuff? I think it was 6 to 7, and you might have mentioned at 5.
No, it's the 5th workshop. So the time has not changed. It is the 5th workshop we've conducted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from directors? If not, then we'll move to item number 10 on the agenda, which is director's comments. And then we'll go to Director Trevino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a comment, actually, a couple of comments. You know, I'm really happy to see the San Gabriel Valley in general, the region coming into its own on water and the environment. This is, I think, a big part due to us, to our district, and the relationships that we have forged, thanks to Tom and our staff with our producers, the Water Master and Three Valleys. I've always said we need to take a regional approach to the issues of water here. And now we have two people coming to talk to us about the chairmanship of the Metropolitan Board. Obviously, they feel that Upper District will play a role in that, and that they want to come and talk to us. And I really I'm also excited by the fact that we have a person who's very familiar with the San Gabriel Valley, having worked with the mutuals and with Water Master in particular, who's now running for the chairmanship of the board of Metropolitan. So I'm excited for the future for us at Upper District and for the San Gabriel Valley in general. I think it's a big step. The other thing too I want to say is, and I'll make this really brief, I know it's late, I hope somebody challenges the governor on the definition of a Brown Act violation. That is the most ridiculous thing I heard.
Trevino, can you repeat what you just said? There was some noise.
That I hope somebody will challenge the definition of a Brown Act violation.
Oh, good.
You know, okay. it's just ridiculous. I mean, how far are we going to go with this? You know, how far are we going to take this that it really impedes on our constitutional right of free speech? And so I have an issue with that. And I hope we monitor it very closely. And I just, and I hope that if need be, we challenge that on a class action lawsuit. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll continue. Dr. Fellow.
President, I have just two issues, and one deals with what Charles just talked about. I'm very happy we had Gloria and Don here. Problematic for me, they're both my friends, and I did serve with Gloria. But you have to know something. You don't know me professionally, but as a journalist and as a professor and administrator at the university, I have been very pro women my entire life. And as a matter of fact, I'm just finishing a chapter. I do a lot of speaking about women in the Civil War, which is a book I'm working on also. And you know, during the Civil War, it was the first time women had a profession they could go to. They were not allowed to do anything in colonial America. And I have to tell you, the name of my book is They're Stealing Our Pantaloons. And it was because anytime a woman walked into a newspaper office, the editors would say, they're here to steal our pants. And having been a journalist, I saw this firsthand. Women, we didn't hire women. And it was always, oh, you know, she'll have kids and we can't call her at midnight to go cover a murder story or go to Washington to cover politics. And that was a bunch of baloney. And I learned then that women had a hard road to hoe. And so we started hiring women, but at the university, I've hired a lot of women. I've hired more women than men, because they just didn't have that opportunity. And I've been very happy with the people I hired. Even on this board, Melissa at the COG, I was very supportive of her. And some of my longtime friends, city council members, were disturbed with me, women, that I was voting for a woman. But I thought she was very competent. And so with that in mind, I'm just very high on Gloria. I think this is a Black woman who, in all chairs, I think Glenn Peterson had a article today on Facebook about how we've never denied a woman or a first-time chair, first-term chair, a second term, and that he thinks she has done a good job. So that's just my feelings. I just think this is the year of Black women, and so that would be my decision. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about is something I've talked to Tom, and I think Tom and Patty are on this, is that, as you know, my division was very severely, it's still being very severely hit by these forest fires. And it's gonna take a lot of reforestation. And Upper District has to become the leader in this reforestation. And we did have a talk with Grace Napolitano about this, and I wanna get to Judy Chu and maybe Senator Feinstein, that in all water legislation, we really need to have money for reforestation. In my cities of Azusa, Arcadia, Monrovia have been hard hit. And we're gonna have great problems if we have a winter that brings a lot of rain. And what I would like to put on people's, in their minds right now, and Tom's working on this, I know, is that I would like to see an expansion of our reforestation projects, our community service activities when we had people come up, especially young people, the scouts. At one time, we had the Board of Supervisors up there on a weekend planting trees. But I'd like us to see what we can do about getting more funds. Elena is the queen of this program. I think we started it, it was an idea 28 years ago, and the Forest Service came in. And I think most of our lands are federal lands. But my idea is if we can put together more money and get Elena out there again, she did a wonderful job putting this all together with more grants, and even doing something in these cities about special lectures or taking some kids on field trips. That's always been my goal, is students and education at the elementary and high school levels and secondary levels. But I just would like us to start thinking about this and maybe putting together a plan that these areas in the foothills need more money. And we're going to have to do some major reforestation. And this district should lead it. We're going to have lots of other groups coming into the valley here. And it is our district that we should lead this cause. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chair, can I just say something?
Yes, please.
If I may, you know, regarding the comments by my colleague, you know, I agree with him. I support women. I support people of all colors. Actually, I support Latinos and for women. But I if there was two white people running for the chair of Metropolitan, we wouldn't say one is Irish and one is let's just say Italian. We would look at them based on their competency and based on what they bring to the. To the office, to the job. And I don't want this to get into a woman, man type of issue or a black, brown issue. It should never be that. It should be who can carry the vision of the agency. It could be our agency, doesn't matter. It could be the Metropolitan General Manager. It does not matter. It does, you know, your gender and your ethnicity should not matter. So this is, I just want to make that point.
Thank you. We'll move on to Vice President Contreras.
Thank you, Mr. President. I echoing Director Trevino's comments, I think they were great and excellent. Sometimes Director Trevino and myself kind of go different ends. Today, I think we're both on board on the very, very same items. So I do echo that I would love to vote, and hopefully we give direction to Director Trevino, maybe at a next meeting to recommend the individual that we want Director Trevino to represent who he should vote for based on our guidance. Maybe it'll be a future agenda item for the next meeting, because this will be right after that, there'd be voting. So with that, I do agree with Director Trevino. and with Tony, you know what? Tony, nothing. I am challenging all of us directors to work on the reforestation and participate, not just allowing the money, but for us as directors, backing it up and supporting and being there. I don't think none of us have been there for a year or two or 3 years. Ask yourself, when was the last time you were out there working with Elena, out there in those particular projects? We need to back them up. So we need to be there with them, not just allowing the money, but let's participate. And I'm challenging each one of you directors that let's, at the next event that Elena has, let's be there. And definitely, Director Fellows, we do need that money and we need the participation. I used to go there before on a regular basis, before I started playing a certain sport that it's, I played every Saturday and Sunday, so I had to pick between the two, but I was looking at my health more than anything else. But I'm challenging each and every one of us on the AB992. I don't think it's a Newsom bill. I think he just signed the bill. But if it is, I agree with Charles Trevino that, yeah, let's challenge it. Because, I mean, put in a little happy face or stuff like that. The Brown Act is three people. So now when does it become two? I understand the new thing because of this COVID-19, we cannot be there and we have to be cautious. But the Brown Act still requires no more than three people or a third person to participate. So if someone responds, maybe one of us should not, the very first one, once you see a happy face. But I don't think a happy face means anything. So with that, I will thank everyone and thank you, President Chavez.
Thank you. And then my comments, I just want to thank Tom and staff for the 60th anniversary presentation. It's one of several parts that we'll see, but I love history. I'm thinking that back in 1990 was my first teaching job 30 years ago. And I've taught different subjects, but I always came back to history. So I was really involved and intrigued of our water history as well. So thank you, Tom, and thank you, staff, as well. And then the second one is during public comments, we had two distinguished guests, Chairwoman Gray and Director Ortega. It's going to be a tough vote. It's going to be a close election, but for myself, I know I have a great relationship with Chairwoman Gray. Worked with her. She worked with our district and did a terrific job, and will continue to do that. And just on Director Ortega, many of you probably don't know that he was my neighbor, and we went to high school together. And so I've known him for a long, long time. He was an upperclassman, which I was jealous of at the time. But now that I'm older, he could have that distinction. And so I worked with both of them. They're terrific candidates. And I hope for the best of them. And I think we'll be served well with either candidate. With that, let's continue with the agenda. Item number 11 is future agenda items. Is there anything that needs to be put forth before this board? If not, then we'll go to item number 12, which is closed session. Mr. Attorney, we have no items before us, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Then with that said, General Manager Love, there's no other business before us. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Having said that, then we'll go to item number 14 and we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you everyone for participating and enjoyed the information.
Thank you everyone. Have a great morning.
Thank you. Be safe everyone.
Thank you.